Last year in the early spring, my friends and I decided to go on a fun trip since we all had been quite busy for the past few months and couldn't spend time together. Our friend Adonis, who was rich like a prince, had a villa in Greece, so we decided to go there. I informed my family beforehand in case they suddenly decided to plan something else, and they seemed to have a habit of doing that. We met at Adonis's house one night and discussed our trip plans. We came to the conclusion that we would fly to Sweden first and hang out there for 2 nights before making the trip to Rhodes. After drinking a bit, we all headed back to our houses. Flight tickets were booked the next day, and all we had to do was wait for the day to arrive. I thought everything would go smoothly till the day where we were flying to Sweden, but it turned out I was wrong. 2 days before my trip, I got a call from my Aunt Flora. My eyes started twitching as I saw her name flashing on my cell phone screen. She was definitely planning something, so I chose to ignore her call until after I departed from home. She gave up after calling me about 3 times, and I sighed in relief. My Aunt Flora was famous for arranging parties, trips, and family vacations unannounced. And there was something about her. Perhaps she had some strong convincing power, but I could never deny her. That was why I knew if I answered that call, I would break down and end up canceling my trip with friends, and there was no way I would let that happen. The next day, after returning from work, I started packing my suitcase, and as I was in the middle of doing it, a slight knock distracted me. I turned around to find my little sister, Sandra, standing in the doorway, waiting for my permission to enter. She walked in after I told her that she could enter, and as she drew closer, I noticed her tense expression. "What is it, Bear?" I asked with worry.
"It's Aunt Flora. They can't find her anywhere."
I hated my movements as I heard her say this. I did notice Mom and Dad's absence at the house, but I thought it might be because they usually go for date night every Thursday. "What are you talking about, Sandra? I know she planned something, so quit the act. She called on my cell phone last night." After saying that, I resumed packing. When we were kids, Laura would always reject her invites. Aunt Flora always acted like she was sick, making us rush there, only to find out she was well. That was why I remembered her tactics.
"Did she call you? But Leo, she's been missing since last night."
The horrified look on her face as she said that didn't seem fake at all. I started to wonder if what she was saying was true, but a part of my mind kept telling me that it could be just like those times when I believed she was severely ill.
"Don't you think we should go there?"
she asked with tear-filled eyes. I looked down at my half-packed suitcase and bit my lips in frustration before taking out my phone and calling Adonis to tell him I couldn't go with them. I told him about my aunt's disappearance, and he understood. The next morning, Sandra, Laura, and I drove to Lublin, where we used to live. It took about 2 hours to get there, but I felt something was off when I was in the driveway. The noises coming from inside made me uncomfortable, and as I entered the house, my frustration peaked when I saw my parents laughing and conversing with Aunt Teresa and her husband. "Don't tell me you all planned this!" As I said this, I heard my sisters giggling from behind.
"I'm sorry, brother, but Aunt Flora..."
Laura started speaking, but I cut her off in the middle.
"Aw, to hell with Aunt Flora! Do you have any idea how unacceptable this is? This trip was important to me, and I had to cancel it because I was genuinely worried."
I stumbled on my words upon noticing Aunt Flora entering in a wedding dress, looking more gorgeous than ever. I immediately turned my gaze to Mom in a confused expression, and she just shrugged.
"I'm sorry for forcing you to come, Leo."
I turned my gaze away in guilt as she said that.
"But everyone's presence was important for me," she added.
Though I desperately wanted to go on my vacation, there was no way I would have missed her wedding if I had known about it. Besides, my friends would have been on the flight by now. Though I was still mad at them that they didn't tell me before I made my plans, I still attended the ceremony with a smile. 3 days after the wedding, I got a call from Adonis's father asking me why we hadn't reached the villa yet and why wasn't Adonis's call getting connected. I told them I wasn't with them because something urgent arose.
It was supposed to be the day when they were supposed to reach Rhodes, so I couldn't understand why they were late. After reassuring his father that they must be on their way, I disconnected the call. I tried calling them, but just as he told me, their numbers were out of reach. I didn't get any calls from his father for the rest of the day, so I thought they must have reached there by then, but their numbers were still available. The next day, when I still couldn't reach them, I got worried and called Adonis' father, asking them if they were there. His voice was filled with sadness as he told me he had no idea where they were, and his servant from the villa told him that they were still not there. I tried everything to reach them, but it was no use. About a week later, I got a call from an unknown number, and when I answered it, I immediately recognized the trembling voice. Gilbert. He told me that the car they rented caught on fire when they were still inside, and only he could survive while everyone else died. He was stuck in the middle of nowhere with no idea how to reach a hospital. The only way he could call me was to borrow a phone from someone he met on his way, but the man had somewhere else to go, so he couldn't help him get to the hospital since it was so far from where they were. I immediately called Adonis' dad and told him everything. But when I asked him to help Gilbert, his reply shook me to the core.
Why is he alive if everyone else is dead?
He disconnected the call after that. I called 911 after that and asked for their help. They reassured me that they would do something, but it's been a year since then, and I haven't heard from them. I have no idea if he was rescued, died, or is still suffering somewhere, waiting for help to arrive. I often wonder if I should have done something more, or put more effort into helping them.
Hey guys, thanks so much for all the support. If you haven't subscribed to the channel yet, please feel free to do so.
This happened a few years ago while I was living in Florida. I'm a female and around 20 years old. I had been going through a pretty rough patch in my life and had the great idea to take a few tabs of LSD and go to St. Augustine for a day trip to take my mind off of everything. St. Augustine is notorious for being insanely haunted, but it's one of my favorite places to go. I went by myself and made the 3-hour drive. This wasn't out of the ordinary for me. I often went on adventures like this by myself and I always had a great time. So I went to the historic downtown and spent my peak looking around all the cool shops and even made one hell of a walk to the lighthouse. Passing by tons of tourists and people going about their day when you're tripping balls walks the fine line of exciting and terrifying, and I love that feeling. When I started coming down, I went back to my car and decided to go to the beach as there was still a solid 2 hours of daylight left. I thought being on the beach during sunset while being in the more mental part of the trip would be amazing. I found some random pull-off area that you had to drive down a mile or so before you hit the parking lot. Not one other car was in it, which was welcomed after being in crowds all day. And this lot was a giant circle and was surrounded by trees and marshy land. Off to the side was a boardwalk that you had to walk quite a ways down to get to the beach. Once I finally got to the sand, I left my shoes by the boardwalk so I could find where it was when I came back. I was still not in my right mind by any means, and the entrance was pretty well hidden. I then walked for a solid 45 minutes down the beach. I found a nice spot with a washed-up log where I could put my bag and clothes while I went for a swim. While I was in the water, I started getting to myself and thinking about all the stories about how extremely haunted this beach truly was. Not long after that, I had a very intense burning up my side. Think like if you get a severe scratch or cut and put rubbing alcohol on it immediately. So my high ass is thinking a ghost had just tried to take me into the depths, and I got out of the water as quick as possible. Upon closer inspection on the log, I realized that it was a jellyfish sting, and I laughed it off. The sun was going down quickly, and I remembered that I had quite a trek back to my car. The jellyfish sting was also a huge damper on my mood, so I grabbed up everything and by the time I made it to the boardwalk again, it was dusk. The boardwalk was probably a half a mile walk back to my car. I had only barely started walking down it when I heard someone talking. A few seconds later, I came across a dirty, older-looking homeless man talking to himself, swinging around a huge machete at plants on the side. I froze in my tracks, not knowing what the hell to do. He was slowly walking in the direction I was, so I decided to try to keep pace with him and follow behind as quietly as possible. This was going well for about 5 minutes, and then he just stopped. I froze in place, not knowing what to do. I decided to just walk by as quickly and calmly as possible in hopes that he wouldn't say anything to me and just keep swinging his machete at the plants. As soon as I passed him, I heard him say something to me. He must have been on something too, because I couldn't understand what he said. I didn't look back and I didn't say anything at all, I just kept walking. I heard his footsteps start to follow behind me. I picked up the pace, hoping that he would lose interest. Unfortunately, this didn't happen. I heard him right behind me, following me a few feet behind, and every once in a while he'd say something, but I ignored him and never looked back. In my mind, I was convinced that if I looked back, he would attack me with that machete and it would be all over. He started saying things to me more frequently, but I still refused to look back or respond in any way. He was becoming angry that I wouldn't acknowledge him and began shouting. I felt the wind from the machete swing behind me and I started to just full-on run at that point. I knew the parking lot wasn't too far away by now and I figured my heightened senses from that dose would easily allow me to outrun him. To my horror, he began running too. It was completely dark outside now and my adrenaline was in full force. I finally made it to the lot and somehow got my keys out of my bag in record time. I jumped in my car and floored it out of there. When I was coming out of the circle, I saw him standing off to the side of the road. He was screaming something and angrily swinging that machete around. I tried to come towards my car, but I honked the horn and drove past him, flying down the road away from this maniac. My friends had always warned me against these little adventures, as I was a young, fairly good-looking girl. It was a running joke that I'd get murdered one day while on one of these, and that experience made me realize how real of a possibility that could actually be.
Let me tell you that I am a prisoner and I am in jail. I was charged with the murder of my husband, and I accept it. I don't feel any regret in doing so, as he was a maniac and he deserved this. I killed him with my own hands, and after that, I surrendered to the cops. Most of you were thinking why I killed him. Just listen to my story from the start and you will know this. I was married to a couple of heavy alcoholic business freaks who was habitual to drinking. Since he was my father's business partner, there was no point in my choice and my own decisions. Just after my graduation, I got the bad news that he had selected a boy, and after 3 months, I was married to that freak. He was a complete monster in bed, and I knew this on my first day after marriage. He made me scream and cry with pain just to fulfill his satisfaction. I begged him, but he tortured me mercilessly. I could think of nothing but only how someone could do this to her own wife. After that day, I was abused again and again, to my breaking point by my own husband. I couldn't bear his torture any, and just after 4 months of getting married, we got apart. I applied for a divorce, but he didn't sign it. It was not a big deal for me, as I had decided not to return to him ever again. Soon, after being apart, I got to know that I was having his child in my belly. I was pregnant, but being a mother, I knew that it was not his or her fault, so I decided to give birth to him and live with him happily. After 9 months, I gave birth to a beautiful and cute baby girl. I knew that if he would know about this, there was no way he was going to accept her as his child, but neither was I going to tell him. We have divorced already, at least from my side, and that was enough for me. I raised my baby to be a nice young girl, and everything was good until she turned 16. In all these years, I had never heard about him, and neither did I want to. But that was my biggest mistake, to think that he had left me alone. It was winter, and it was too cold outside, so everyone used to go to bed early, and our house was not connected to any of our neighbors. One day, he returned to me again, but this time as a totally different person. I was fooled by his words and fell into his trap. I accepted him by giving him mercy, but on the same day, he showed his true colors. He returned home like before in a completely drunk condition. I couldn't let him see my daughter in this condition, so I asked my daughter to go into her room. But he was a maniac, an alcoholic. He came to me and started beating me and abusing me. I was crying and screaming for help, but there was no one except my daughter. She couldn't see me in that state and ran to protect me, but she was not aware of him, and that was the biggest mistake she made. She tried to stop her, but he kicked her so hard that she fell into a corner and couldn't get up, but screamed in pain. He was angry with her, so he pulled me by my hair and looked at me inside the room. After this, he went to my daughter and raped her. He was a complete maniac, and even with her daughter, he acted like a beast. I could hear my daughter scream in pain while he was abusing her, but I was helpless and I couldn't do anything. All of a sudden, the whole thing was covered with scary silence. I shouted for my daughter and asked my husband to leave her from inside the room. After a few seconds, I heard footsteps coming toward me. I started begging him to open the door, and he opened it. I pushed him and ran to my daughter. She was lying on the floor and was bleeding. She was covered with scratches and brushes all over her body and was lying on the floor completely nude. It was his doing. The beast even didn't leave her daughter. I shook her again and again and shouted at her to get up, but she wasn't reacting at all. And how could she when she was already dead? She couldn't bear his torture, and it was all due to him. I looked at him with killer intention, and he shouted at me and asked me to bring a chilled drink for him from the refrigerator. I didn't say a word to him. I stood up, went to the refrigerator, and took out a bottle of red wine. He was sitting on the sofa facing me. The wine bottle was chilled and was making my hands numb. The drink inside was frozen, rock hard. I raised the bottle and hit my husband on the head several times until I could see him all covered in blood. I killed him with my own hands and then laughed out loud, but the tears won't stop bursting out of my eyes. I went to my daughter's body, and I told her that I was responsible for her death, and I was the one who gave him another chance. I should have killed him when he was doing such things with me, but I left her and let him kill my daughter. After sitting for about an hour, I called the cops and asked them to come to my house. When they arrived, they found two dead bodies, and I was sitting there. They asked me, and I told them everything. They felt pity for me, but I had killed my husband. It was part of their duty to arrest me. I was arrested and charged with killing my husband, even though he was the one who killed my daughter. But I was not feeling guilty, and neither did I regret what I did. He was a demon, and he deserved his punishment. The only guilt I had was that just because of my little mistake, my sweet daughter lost her life. She had her whole life ahead of her, and now she was buried in the ground with all her dreams. I ask this question to my readers. What do you think? What I did was wrong or not? Decide this and think to yourself what you had done if you were in my place.
I used to work at a place called O'Hurley's General Store here in Shepherdston, West Virginia. It was a real old-timey general store, the kind that sells everything from buckets and barrels to books and pocket watches, in addition to the regular selection of groceries and liquor. It was an alright job for a young man such as myself, patronized by generally polite and well-meaning folk. Sure, I had a fair few drunks get a little rowdy when I wouldn't sell them hard liquor on a Sunday, but nobody ever put a gun in my face. But that ain't to say that I didn't have one or two incidents in there that put the fear of God into me, and this here is one of them. So I'm working late one Saturday night, stacking shelves and cleaning house when a man walks in wearing a black tailored suit. It was one of those that fit him like a glove and gave off an obvious air of wealth, which marked him as an out-of-towner in my book. But that suit was just about the only normal thing about him. He was white as the cotton fields, so pale he was almost gaunt, with razor-sharp facial features and slick-back silver hair. I hear the little bell on the front entrance tinkle, so I do my thing and walk back behind the counter to serve him, which is where I laid eyes on him. He walks up to me, and with this wolfish smile on his lips, asks me for a can of lighter fluid. I fetch him what he asked for, making a little small talk as I ring him up on the register. I asked him where he's from.
D.C., he replies, just passing through.
I gave him a polite smile and asked him if he was one of those politician types, to which he gives the vague reply of something like that. He then proceeds to take out the biggest roll of dollar bills I'd ever seen in my life, all hundreds from what I could tell, then places one down on the counter in front of me. I give the man his change, remarking that it's a good thing it had been a busy previous few hours, or he'd have wiped me out for change. I said it in this fairly jokey tone, expecting him to at least give a polite chuckle in return, but he doesn't so much as smirk. He just takes out the Zippo lighter from his suit pocket, just about the shiniest I'd ever seen, and proceeds to fill it up with the lighter fluid right there in front of me. I've seen a fair few of those lighters in my time, but never one that I could have sworn was plated with silver. I figured he must have been hankering for a smoke, something fierce, and I told him as such, but he replied that he didn't smoke. Right as he says that, he finishes up filling up his lighter, but not before accidentally spilling a little of the lighter fluid onto his finger. Then just before he pieces the shiny-looking Zippo back together, he brings the finger to his mouth and sucks the drop of flammable liquid from his finger like it was a drop of homemade wine or something. Now, naturally, I quietly recoil when he does that, not quite being able to believe what I just witnessed. He sees me do so and shoots me another one of those wolfish grins like he enjoyed the idea of freaking me out like that. I was just on the verge of asking him what that was all about when I hear the doorbell of the general store tinkle again. I look over towards the front entrance and in walks this young lady who looks to be about the same age as my little sister. Couldn't have been no older than about 14 years old. Only she's dressed much younger, almost like how you'd expect a toddler to dress, in this denim skirt type thing with white embroidered flowers on it. She addresses him as Daddy, so I figured it was his daughter, and tells him she needs to use the bathroom. The man in the suit then turns to me, asks if there's a bathroom that his daughter can use, so I give him the key to one that we had inside the store. Only instead of just handing it to his kid, he takes out a little leather wallet-looking thing from his jacket and hands that, the lighter, then the key to the little lady, who then makes her way off towards the door before locking it behind her. I started to feel incredibly uncomfortable. Something about the whole situation just didn't sit right with me at all. I had a sneaking suspicion of what was contained inside the small leather wallet thing, but I didn't feel like I was in any position to confront the suited man on it, especially not based solely on a hunch. But it wasn't just that. The kid looked absolutely nothing like him. She had these soft, rounded, delicate features along with real curly hair, while the suited man's face was so sharp he looked like he could have cut a swath through a pumpkin patch. And the way she called him Daddy, a girl that age should be well on to calling her father Dad, Pop, or anything but Daddy. I tried to distract from my discomfort by asking him where he and his daughter were headed.
You ask a lot of questions, don't you, young man?
He replied, dropping what had once been a kind of formal civility entirely and proceeded to stare a hole through me. His eyes, man. He had these narrow brown eyes so dark that were almost black, and I felt a shudder run through me as he fixed his gaze to mine.
Just making conversation,
I remember saying back to him, shifting nervously behind the counter.
Well, you know how the old saying goes, don't you?
His voice was smooth,
just creepily calm, like there was no emotion behind it whatsoever. Curiosity killed the cat. The suited man turned, then started walking up and down the aisles, eyeing up the products like we were some quaint backwater relic, which I suppose was exactly what we were. I get back to cleaning house for a minute or two, only it's more just going through the motions while I keep an eye on what this guy's doing. I figured it'd only be a minute or two before his kid emerges from the bathroom and they fix to get back on the road. But 5 minutes goes by, then 10, and still no sign of her. Just as I'm about to ask him if he thinks she's okay in there, the bathroom door unlocks with a loud snap and the door opens up. There's no flush, nothing to indicate she'd actually been using the bathroom for its intended purpose, and when she emerges, she seems all sleepy and dozy looking. Then she hands back the keys, the lighter, and the black leather wallet to the suited man in a daze before giving him a lazy sounding, "Thank you, Daddy." The way she said it right then, I knew he wasn't her father, and it was dripping with sleaze. And the look he gave her in return was one a father should never, ever give his daughter under any circumstances. It made me sick to my stomach, and I wanted the pair of them out of my store immediately. But we rarely just come out and say something like that where I'm from. We'll say something with an implication, if you catch my drift. "Safe travels now," I remember saying to the suited man. My tone was friendly, but the look I gave him was not. He turns and looks at me like he was about to go through me for shortcut, like he could have eaten me without salt there and then. Then he walks up to the counter, places the bathroom key down on top of it, and says one final thing to me. "Remember, young man, curiosity killed the cat." Then he walks that little lady out of the store, and then drove off into the night. I seriously considered calling the sheriff right after they left. But what was I going to tell him? That a man was traveling with a girl that appeared to be his daughter? I'd be laughed right off the line. I could have mentioned that I thought that there was something illegal in the leather wallet that he'd handed her, but I got the distinct impression that nothing we could ever accuse him of was really going to stick. He had all that money, and that look he gave me too. So I didn't say a word to anyone. But for the remaining few hours of my shift, and for the next few days, I heard his words rattling around my skull whenever I paid any mind to him at all. Curiosity killed the cat.